You're listening to the free edition of Sweden in Focus from The Local. If you would like to listen to a full-length version of the podcast, as well as an additional midweek episode, please check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade to Membership Plus. Here's this week's free edition.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to Sweden in Focus, The Local's weekly news podcast. We're recording this episode on Thursday the 14th of March, and this week we're going to talk about why the government just presented new figures on migration. We'll get insider info on Sweden's oldest children's magazine and how it manages to stay hugely popular in the digital age. For Membership Plus subscribers, we'll examine a new report showing that private schools are giving their pupils grades that are too high. And finally, we'll look at how Malmö is preparing to host the Eurovision Song Contest and whether the city's ready for the anti-Israel protests that are expected to take place there. I'm Paul O'Mahony in Stockholm, and I'm joined today from Malmö by Becky Waterton and Richard Orange. How are things?
Good.
Good. I met one of the listeners. Kind of surreal. I was out with my son in the swimming pool. He does like high diving. And I was talking to him about something and somebody went, are you Richard? And I went, yeah. He goes, I thought it was you. I know you from the podcast. I was like, what?
How are you handling your newfound fame?
I feel like a star. So if you're out there, Killian, I think he was called Killian, you know, thanks for listening. And I don't know what to
thanks
say.
Thanks for inflating Richard's ego.
Slightly. Very, very tiny amount.
Let's start today with immigration news and a press conference held on Wednesday by the Migration Minister, Maria Malmer Stenergard. What was the purpose of the press conference, Becky?
Well, it wasn't any big announcement of migration policy or anything like that. It was more kind of an overview, a presentation of migration statistics, specifically the statistics from last year. So I guess politically, if you were talking about the purpose of the press conference, it's a way for the government to kind of say, hey, look, our paradigm shift on migration, here's how it's doing. Fewer people are coming here. Good for us.
Okay, and did anything new emerge?
Well, the stats were a bit interesting. So last year saw the lowest number of granted residence permits for asylum seekers since the turn of the millennium at just under 8,000. And I mean, in 2016, which was the peak, this was over 85,000. So this is like 10 times smaller than at the peak. The number of people seeking asylum in Sweden last year decreased around 25% compared to the year before, which is the opposite of the general trend in Europe where applications for asylum are rising. Although the Migration Agency has said previously that the groups of refugees coming to Europe now don't usually make their way up to Sweden. It's, for example, people from Northern Africa who'll go to France, people from Turkey or Syria who will more often go to Germany or Austria. The most common country of origin for asylum seekers to Sweden last year was Afghanistan, followed by Iraq, followed by Syria. While this year, the largest group is people from Uzbekistan. Although we're only 3 months into the year so far, so that might change. Most of the press conference focused on asylum seekers, but there was a brief mention of work permits too. So these are down from 24,117 in 2022 to 20,823 in 2023. So that's a decrease of almost 3,300. And I mean, that kind of makes sense when we look at the ways that they've been tightening up work permits and stuff like that. The government's also said previously that it wants to crack down on people who are in Sweden on false grounds if they're not fulfilling the requirements of their work permit, for example. And it looks like that's kind of borne fruit too. So the number of recalled permits increased to 10,138 last year, up from 4,478. So that's more than double. So I mean, this is all good news for the coalition, really, who have had this paradigm shift that I mentioned before, where they've basically had this kind of aim to cut the number of people coming to Sweden from elsewhere. The one thing that Malmö Stenergard said she wasn't happy about was the fact that only 38% of people who have had their residence permits rejected actually leave Sweden. despite around 3/4 of asylum seekers having their applications rejected. She said that the government aims to combat this by increasing the number of police checks on foreigners, for example, as well as creating what she called obligatory or mandatory centres for receiving refugees and for returning them to their home countries. Although it's not quite clear what that exactly would entail.
No,
press conference.
No, and we'll be reporting on that as it becomes clearer what these policies end up becoming. Okay, thanks for that roundup, Becky. Before we move on, I just want to mention the next episode of Sweden in Focus Extra, in which we'll talk about why Swedish companies should employ more foreign language speakers. And it features a chat that Becky had with two Swedish language experts from an agency called Native. Here's a preview, and the voice you'll hear is that of Erik Wenberg, the founder of the agency.
Swedes in general are very good at English. And I think if you're writing for another Swedish person, you might have the same references and you've got like similar vocabulary and so. But when you are writing for a truly international audience, I think Swedes, myself included, sometimes tend to underestimate how different it is.
That was Erik Wenberg, and we'll have that full interview for Membership Plus subscribers on Wednesday. Now, we're going to talk now about Kamratposten, or KP, a magazine that comes out once every 3 weeks for children aged 8 to 15. Now, when we were chatting earlier in the week about what to discuss in the podcast, you suggested this, Richard. What is it about KP that made you want to talk about it?
It's that my daughter this week, she sent her first KP pen pal letter. So it's a brev compass, it's called, to someone called Lily from Grenna in deepest Småland. And I just found the whole idea of, you know, pen pals is like, it's like something that, you know, Astrid Lindgren would have done as a little girl. You know, it's like something straight from the 1930s even, really. And I just think it's super sweet that it's still going on. It's kind of brilliantly old fashioned and even thriving in the age of YouTube. And she's been so excited about it, you know. So she got this letter from this girl and she's, you know, been spending weeks sort of crafting her response and what she's going to say to her. And I just think it's so sweet. And she's really a massive fan of Cool P. I mean, she reads it cover to cover, not every week, every 3 weeks. So it's great for her reading because I really struggle to get her to read books nowadays, but Cool P she will read. And I also think it's really funny how open it is about things like puberty, periods and masturbation, which I think magazines back home for children would be a lot more inhibited about. You know, and I recently bought her this book called Stora Boken om Knopp och Kropp, which means something like the big book about the body and the brain. And it's basically bits from their letters section where, you know, people between the ages of about 11 and 13, you know, send in their worries about masturbation or their sexual organs and whether they're normal and things like that. And then the magazine answers, you know, completely without shame, and there's no sort of sense of embarrassment. It's very Swedish, you know, and I just think it's brilliant. And, you know, just an amazingly useful and good, wholesome organization. So yeah, that's why I thought it'd be fun to talk about.
Okay, thanks Richard. And I chatted earlier this morning with the editor of Kopea, Lukas Björkman, to get some insight into how the magazine works. Let's hear what he had to say. I'm a parent and my children are exactly the right age for Kopea, and they were very excited to hear I was going to talk to you. But how would...
Cool.
Yeah.
what ages are they?
They're 11 and 9.
Oh, that's the perfect KP age. Absolutely. 11 is actually the average reader age.
Yeah, the 11-year-old has been reading it for a few years and the 9-year-old has probably been reading it since he was about 6 because he wanted to be like his big brother, you know.
Benefits of being a younger sibling, right?
But how would you explain what it is to someone who has never heard of the magazine?
It's difficult because I haven't found anything like it around the globe. There are lots of children's magazines, but they're often either newspapers or solely entertainment or comics. Mm. We're like the ultimate lifestyle magazine for children between 8 and 14, maybe.
Yeah.
And I haven't found that anyplace else. And being that kind of magazine, we have to take a lot of things in consideration because we have to write about everything. everything kids between 8 and 14 have questions about or amuses them or everything that's important in their life in those ages. So it's extremely broad topic-wise.
Yeah, and so from what I've seen from my own kids, they can't wait for each new issue to arrive. They read it from cover to cover when it does come through the postbox. But how do you stay on top of what children are interested in?
It's like 90% thanks to the readers, because we have very active readers who tells us what they want to read about and what they like and who their idols are and all the jokes. And we have a section called embarrassing, pin something Swedish, all the embarrassing stories and all the jokes and all the letters to the editor. All that this stuff is from the readers. Of course, we edit it, but it is from them.
Yeah. How much correspondence would you say you have from your readers?
At least 1,500 messages a week.
Oof. It's a lot, yeah.
So close to 100,000 a year. We, of course, read everything. We don't have the power to give them all answers or publish them all, but we read everything carefully, and that's how we can keep the content of the magazine so mixed and so broad. It's because of the volume of response we get.
How long has the magazine been around?
132 years.
Wow. Has it always been as popular as it is now?
Actually, it has been more popular. Now we have about 120,000 readers. And I think it has been up close to 200,000 in the 90s.
Okay.
Back then, they priced it very, very low because there was a philosophy that everybody should afford KP. They had easier budget to meet back then, and I have to deliver a little bag of money every year to the to the owners. So we have to price it a little bit higher now. I think we could easily double the readers if we were for free.
I have a really strong memory from a few years ago when I didn't really know what Kope was. Like the Local's former editor, David Landis, came into work and he was amazed about how direct Kope was in how it spoke about sex and relationships with young readers. And another colleague from the UK said much the same thing. So after you agreed to chat with me, I got in touch with David and he sent through a couple of questions for you. So I'm going to hand over to him now.
Hi, this is David Landis. I'm an American who's lived in Stockholm for the better part of 2 decades, raised my kids there. And as an American-born parent who had Kuopea delivered to his home in Sweden for many years, I'd like to know how you determine the boundaries, if any, for what topics are appropriate to cover. Are some topics off limits? And if so, what are they and why? If not, how do you approach sensitive subjects that very well may offend people?
We don't worry that much about offending people. Basically, we try to answer the questions that we get from the readers. So it's not about us wanting to push the limits for what the readers can handle. It's about answering the most common questions we get. The readers between 8 and 14 decides what subject is okay. And we don't really worry about parents getting offended, because we've been doing this since 1969, answering these kinds of questions. We have a lot of routine.
Yeah. Do you ever get complaints from parents who maybe come from more prudish societies?
It's like one a year, maybe.
Okay.
We have in Sweden something called the Bible Belt in Småland across the country, where a lot of hardcore Christians live there. And they also complain sometimes, but it's not as much as you would think. I think most parents prefer their kids getting information from us, our experts, compared to getting it from older kids in the schoolyard, because that's where they pick up stuff otherwise.
As someone who works in media and communications, I'd like to hear about some of the steps you and your colleagues take to ensure Kuopea stays relevant for young people who are really drowning in a lot of digital alternatives. How do you guys compete with TikTok and YouTube as a source of information for young people?
Good question. We try to be on TikTok and from there try to direct the kids to our site. That's hard. I think Lilla Aktuellt on Swedish television actually does a much better job than us at TikTok, because they publish news there and they got a lot of young followers, and it's really impressive. But we have also noticed that our unique selling point is actually that we're not digital. our main product is not digital, and parents like that, and parents pay. Children just have to like it. So that's, we have double target group, one that pays and one that has to really enjoy the content. So sure, we have to stay relevant, but I think topic-wise, we do that thanks to the reader's input. But we also have to stay old school, so parents recognize KP from when they were young, 30 years ago. So we can't change too much. Parents have to recognize the product and they have to see the children like it. So that's the balance. We actually sell screen-free journalism and screen-free infotainment, if you like. That's our product. That's what parents pay for, our only source of income, really.
That's all for this week's free edition of Sweden in Focus. If you'd like to hear a full-length version of the podcast each week, as well as an additional midweek episode with more interviews and analysis, please upgrade to Membership Plus. Make sure to check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade. Sweden in Focus is a podcast by The Local Europe. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. The publisher is James Savage.